You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Adrian El Critico here to do a review of Hunter x Hunter. If y'all knew how many attempts there was to actually get this recorded, you would be like, will the boys do it? Will they actually succeed this time? And I hope we do.
Well, now that you said something, we won't.
Knock on wood. Don't actually do that, because then we're going to have to edit that out. But yeah, it's just, it's me, your host. I got Luane with me.
Hey, how's it going?
And I got Matt Foster.
Hello, how goes it?
And what's better than that? Just three guys being dudes, talking about survival in the wilderness, reminiscing on old celebrities like Devin Sawa and Nick Stahl. Luane, what's this movie about?
Well, Marcel, played by Devin Sawa, as you mentioned, Anne, played by Camille Sullivan, and Renee, played by Summer Howell, are a family that live in the middle of nowhere. Like it's the 1800s, hunting, trapping, fur trading, all that stuff to survive. Sawa's character lives for this. His wife is probably okay with it until they had a kid, and now she kind of wants a better life for their daughter, who's learning all dad's hunting and trapping and stuff. And while Marceau and Renee are out doing their hunting and trapping thing, they discover that there may be a rogue wolf stalking their hunting grounds again. Apparently they've had problems with this before. So one night Joseph leaves Sullivan and Howell to go hunt for this wolf, and he doesn't come back. So during his absence, the wife and daughter have to try and enlist the aid of the local fish and game cops to help find him. They don't succeed. That gets nowhere. Then to add further complications, they discover an injured man, played by Nick Stahl, near their cabin, who may or may not be part of whatever else is going on in a kind of a bleak thriller.
This crept up at the very end of the year, and everywhere I've kind of seen word about it, I've seen it described, yes, as a thriller. I've also seen it described as a horror movie, and I believe both of those titles are accurate, especially with, look, what's really important about this review and about every review, obviously, is that we don't give any spoilers. Is it possible to spoil a change in mood? Don't go into this thinking you're going to watch just a regular, let's survive in the woods type of movie because you're going to watch it with your grandpa, your dad, or something like that.
No.
No, no. This is for the horror enthusiast who also happens to like movies like that.
I mean, my mom would laugh her ass off at this.
This actually reminds me a lot of these novels that I used to listen to as audiobooks, like in the 90s, that were like thrillers or suspense stories. But it's like after Silence of the Lambs, they have to throw in like more and more sort of horrific things to sort of add punch to their story. And boy, does this one do it.
Yeah, I remember that era, the splatterpunk crime genre.
Yeah.
Who would you say? Robert Bloch, Rex Miller.
Yeah, that type of stuff. This feels like it was originally like one of those sort of novels. And it looks, I don't know what the weather is supposed to be like there, but it looks cold and miserable all the time. It just, everything looks bleak. And when I say that they live in the middle of nowhere, like it's the 1800s, I mean like they're in a cabin that has clearly been there for several generations. Like, in the interior walls, you can see gaps of light between the planks.
Yeah, I got a quibble, actually, because a guy from the 1800s would have actually mortared up those gaps.
Well, yeah. I mean, the exterior looks pretty tight, but all the interior walls were... I also was trying to figure out how they charge their flashlights and their walkie-talkies.
They had a little bit of stuff. Like, they had a generator sitting in the background at one point, and they had a car. They just weren't using much. Or a truck, rather.
Well, and they make a point that they have to park the car up by the road. Like, they're really in the middle of nowhere. At one point, when they're talking to the fish and game people, they're like, you're in the middle of a federal land. And she says that his family's been there for generations, and nobody seems to be aware of them. They are really in the middle of nowhere.
Well, and the game warden guy even kind of gives her a hairy eyeball, like, maybe that's not true, and the husband is lying to her. Or it's some, like, old grampy lived there, and they lost it in the Depression, and he thinks he can still go back on it.
Right. Yeah, it's really hard to gauge how true anything is in this movie.
And part of that, I believe, is, you know, I wasn't expecting bad acting at all from any of these actors, but they gave actually, like, really, really great performances to the point where I felt like it was exceptional. I think Devon Sawa really proved to himself that, like, or proved to everybody with this film that he's not just the 90s actor who got away. Same for Nick Stahl. Like, I'm used to Nick Stahl from, I'm not even sure if he's in this, but Terminator 3. Is that, like, maybe, like, the last thing I saw him in?
Devon Sawa in this, it reminded me of the Against Type turn that Ethan Embry did in Devil's Candy, where he's just like, is that the guy from Can't Hardly Wait? You know? Is that the Idle Hands dude?
I think it's even comparable to that film in terms of its, like, its bleakness.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this movie doesn't really pull any punches, and I think that it might leave a little people feeling, I don't know, upset at the bleakness of the film, but I really dug it. I actually, like, wasn't upset in the slightest bit with the choices that the movie made, and it led to one of the most satisfying conclusions I've seen in a horror movie this year.
Oh, yeah.
And also just one of, like, the most memorable final acts in a film.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I know that there are movies that I liked better this year, but I have a feeling I'm going to be talking about this one for a bit.
Oh, yeah. This will stick with you for a while. And it's interesting because we talk about Sawa and Stahl, right? Because we know them. We know their faces. We know their names. The other two sort of major actresses in this, the Camille Sullivan and Summer Howell, that are the wife and daughter, are really pretty solid because they've got to carry about half this movie on their own. Following this movie, it's really the mother, Sullivan's character, it's pretty much her story all the way through. Like, it starts off like it's going to be about Sawa, and then he sort of dips out for a while. And she has to then sort of carry things along, and she actually has a pretty substantial character change from the beginning of the film to the end of the film. Because despite living like a pioneer woman, she's sort of timid about a lot of this stuff, right? She's the one who gets stuck doing the domestic stuff, even in this cabin. And the daughter and her husband are the ones going out doing the manly stuff. Like, there's a scene where, because Sawa's been gone for a bit, the mother has the daughter teach her how to do things like skin animals and stuff so that they have the ability to survive in the event he doesn't come back. And that becomes way important as it comes along, her ability to get adjusted to having to do that sort of end of things as opposed to what she's kind of been getting by with in domestically instead.
Right. I don't like to see anyone typecast in anything, but when it comes to Camille Sullivan, if anyone were to mention, like, hey, what's an underrated horror movie, kind of like iconic actress or iconic character, I'm going to recommend them this movie for her.
Oh, yeah.
Just because of the kind of arc that her character takes is done so well through her emotions, her facial reactions, the way that she has to yell every time. She really does a tremendous fucking job in this movie. That being said, not all movies are perfect. I don't think this one is perfect. No. I think if any of the shortcomings of this film have to do with maybe some of the side characters, for instance, we mentioned a couple police officers who are kind of trying to help out, kind of maybe not. They kind of reminded me of the sheriff from Misery, who's like, you know what? I think something's going on, but Who knows?
I agree that, like, were I their constituency, I would be frustrated. I have to say, though, like, if you've ever been to, like, dealt with the authorities in some, like, far-flung part of Montana or North Dakota or someplace, they're dead on. There's a scene where they get a call about a habituated bear, and he goes out and he shoos the bear off and writes the people a ticket for not having their dumpster chain shut. He's like, you feed bears, they come back. It's your fault. And he's real deadpan about it. And I thought that, because that's how that guy is, that game warden that lives in a fire tower. He's definitely not, you know, Kevin Spacey in LA Confidential court in the press.
No.
Okay, I take back my complaint. I take back my complaint, and I'll let Matt Foster take over.
I have to say, too, in terms of just like someone who does a lot of good tonal and nonverbal acting in this movie, Google is telling me her name is Lauren Cochran, plays Lucy, the deputy.
Oh, yeah. She's good in this.
I don't want to fly too close to the spoiler sun, but there is a theme throughout of misdirection about who's going to have to end up doing the action, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'll put it that way. The manly men get warped pretty quick in this. Like, when she sees, like, the carnage at the end, and when she sees some of the, like she, at one point, she discovers a crime scene, and just, like, she has a very real, very human reaction that's like, just the right key. It's not, like, dead-eyed Mel Gibson and Lethal Weapon. And it's not histrionic. Like, she doesn't just, like, fall apart and not do her job. She's not that person in the horror movie that annoys you. She's right dead in the middle, where you would think, like, a normal person who's good under adverse conditions but still has empathy would be.
Right. Well, somebody who hasn't been beaten down by the horrors of the job, like your traditional cops in a lot of stuff, right? Because they clearly don't do a lot of that. But that was actually one of the things I tried to say one of the other times that we recorded this, was that the thing about this movie that I found super interesting is every time you think you know what this movie's doing, or you finally have a handle on it, or you're like, oh, this is where they're going to do that. Oh, just kidding. They're not going to do that. And it's going to go in a completely different direction. And then once it does that, you're like, all right, I got it handled now, except that you don't.
The emotional tone of the end, where it's like this kind of slurry of grief and anger, and then also displaced anger.
Yes.
I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that it's a gore scene. You might even go so far as to say it's a little bit of a twist ending, but it does not feel unearned emotionally because it represents the person breaking in a realistic way.
Yeah, I think you guys have both captured this perfectly. So unless there's anything else you would want to add to that, maybe you could just take that into your final thoughts.
My final thought is that this probably has a strong content warning. I don't know. Some, you know, in the run up to it, one of you guys asked me to rate it in chat because I watched it first, and you wanted to know so you could brace yourself. And I'm dead inside. Like I've often repeated the story that we watched Raw at a Fantastic Fest, and they served steak tartare, and all around me people were like pushing away their steak tartare as they lost their appetite, and I'm like, you guys aren't going to eat those? That's expensive shit. Hand that over.
Exactly.
And so, I ate a bowl of raw meat during a movie about cannibals, right? I was a little bit, like, I did a little bit of the old Peter Griffin, during this one, which puts it up there with, like, Audition.
Oh!
In terms of the peak of an oh shit moment.
Sure.
However, I don't want to not recommend it to people on that basis, because it is a 16th of the movie. So you have to, I guess you have to weigh your own tolerance. It's a well shot, well performed, I guess it's an outdoor bottle movie in a sense. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 outdoor sheds you should build to skin deer in so you're not doing it at the table.
Yes.
All right, Luane.
Oh, man, this, we talked about, I mean, we've kind of hinted around that the ending to this is pretty rough, but a lot of the other violence and more potentially horrific things in this movie are always kind of slightly out of focus or just sort of at the edge of the camera. They save everything up to get to the end of the movie. And everything in this movie from the beginning is leading you to basically justifying the ending and show you that, no, this is not out of nowhere. And no, this is not over the top. And no, this is the closest to a real horrific journey. It's weirdly cathartic. And frankly, as rough as this year has been for everybody, this has a what could have been a shocking ending or whatever. But instead it was like, yeah, this is exactly how this is going to go. And the evidence of that is all the way through the movie. I think this is really well constructed. I think the performances all give weight to something that in the wrong hands could have been boring or disinteresting, and it's not. Every minor character in here, even the yuppies who can't lock their damn garbage, there's a little weight to even some of what they're doing. This is a really solid movie. It's hard to recommend to a lot of people I know, but there are people for whom this is exactly the thing. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 toboggans, which, instead of being used for like fun in the snow, are the thing that they use to drag their meager supplies from the roadway to this cabin so that they don't die.
I want to give a quick shout out to Sean Linden, who is the writer and director of this movie. He has done a few indie things, but this is like probably his biggest get in his career so far. And it's well worth it. I stated that, yeah, this kind of crept up just at the end of the year, but it is more than welcome at the horror table, which is plenty full from this year. There's been some really great horror movies. There's been some really shitty horror movies. And this one comes out on top. It's noticeable. I want people to see it. For people who love movies like Leave No Trace, you do have to know that, no, this is a horror movie at the end. And for people who love horror movies that might not want to see something like Leave No Trace, you have to know, like, no, don't worry. This will still give you what you want. I was riveted by this. I never found myself being uninterested. I never found myself being bored. Even when I thought it was going to be a different thing, I was still captivated. And as we stated, at the end of it, it just kind of leaves in this perfectly knit package that mm-hmm. was like, yes, I will take more of this, please, despite how bleak it is. That being said, when this comes out, this has come out already. I'm sure it says rated R for this, or maybe it says not rated for this reason. Just pay attention to that, and you'll know whether or not this is something that you should see. I definitely recommend it. I'm going to tell people to check this one out. I know people who will definitely love this movie, and it deserves to be seen. I'm sorry that we're doing this so late, but hell yeah, I dug the hell out of this. I'm going to give this 4 Renaissance of 90s actors out of 5. I'm looking forward to more Devin Sawa and Nick Stahl, and hell, let's bring in, oh man, who's the dude from Blade that we just saw and embattled? Steven Dorff. Let's bring him into the mix too. And anyone else that you could think of. All right, y'all, back to the cabin. No wonder this has been so difficult to record. We've actually been doing this in the woods in a trip that Chris Cox made us all take together.
Can they be the woods near the Salt Lick Barbecue?
Sounds good.